ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Just there's a very short remaining portion of this chapter, and when I complete that and then explain how the Bhagavatam is composed a little bit. Yesterday we heard the concluding section of chapter 12 about the feelings of Maharaj Yudhisthira, his feeling deeply concerned about the wrongs that had been committed. We had some discussion about were there actually any wrongs committed. Do you mind if I put this over here?
Yes. I'm not sure why it's not quite properly. So.
Is that working?
Not sure.
This is recorded in any case. I'll read two sentences here. At the very beginning of the purport that we read yesterday, Prabhupada writes, Maharaj Yudhisthira was the ideal and celebrated pious king of the world. And still he was greatly afraid after the execution of the battle of Kurukshetra, because of the mass killing in the fight, all of which was done only to install him on the throne. He therefore took all the responsibility for sins committed in the warfare, and to get rid of all these sins he wanted to perform three sacrifices. Then, other things that we discussed, then Prabhupada continues. If Maharaj Yudhisthira is a sinner, in his daily discharge of duties, in royal administration of state affairs, wherein killing of man and animals is a recognized art, that one can just imagine the amount of sins committed consciously or unconsciously by the untrained population of Kali Yuga, who have no way to perform sacrifices to please the Supreme Lord. We had this discussion. How is it possible there could have been sinful activities by Maharaj Yudhisthira? That so, if there is any uncertainty, it shouldn't be uncertainty. There was inadvertent harm. So, in the course of the execution of devotional service, we may also harm other living entities. Prabhupada would say, by breathing, by drinking water, by walking, you know, by existing. Other living entities are being sacrificed, lives, and their, you know, pain is being inflicted just by our existence. So what to do? We try to go out of existence, but that's not a solution. The performance of devotional service, once Prabhupada said, you shouldn't even walk over grass without doing so in service of Krishna. So that's an overall platform for us this acting in devotional service to Krishna, as was Maharaj Yudhisthira acting in devotional service to Krishna. Even in the course of doing so, inadvertent sins, he uses the word crimes 3 times, were committed. And so, the duties are to be properly done as best we can, and the as best we can standard is that Krishna is pleased. There are scriptural guidelines to understand that, but that's the aim, that's the objective. We've heard it. What is the ultimate purpose of sacrifice? Satisfying the Supreme Personality, Hari. So here he says it again. Therefore, the prime duty of the human society is to satisfy the Supreme Lord by the performance of one's occupational duty. Second chapter, first canto, Bhagavatam. Prabhupada refers to the life of Lord Chaitanya as that ideal standard. Naturally so. Krishna taught surrender to me. Lord Chaitanya came and taught how to surrender to Krishna. And so he did so with an ideal standard. And so the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was intended. It's especially relevant to us. Not that we imitate, but the standard that he established is our standard. And in our following Lord Chaitanya's standard, which means following the teachings of Rupa Goswami, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? We're trying to accomplish this satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, Hari. And Prabhupada comments here, the view is to promote prosperity and peace in society. He, as an author, is stating that's his intended purpose. We are repeating the same with a view to bring about peace and prosperity in society. When Prabhupada, in India, before coming to America, had begun his translation work, and the first volume was published, that poster that Prabhupada made with a very serious look on his face, and you know that the masthead across the top was the great work of ancient India to bring about peace and prosperity in the world. That phrase meant something to Prabhupada. He mentions this. We're going to, after reading this, we're going to go, because I've completed already chapter 12. Immediately after this section, the yajna is done. Krishna, by his kindness, stays with the Pandavas for a few months and then begins making his way with Arjuna and some members of the Yadu dynasty back to Dwarka. That's how the chapter ends. So it's a cut. And then there's Vidura returns, Dhritarashtra is delivered. And then the Pandavas are waiting for Arjuna to return. He hasn't returned. And they see various omens and there's speculation. What does this mean? And then Arjuna returns. And Arjuna describes what happened. Krishna left. And his dismal countenance is displayed. Then by his remembrance of Krishna, and especially his remembrance of the instructions of Krishna on the Kurukshetra battlefield, he feels rejuvenated. Then he can understand Krishna did that especially so that he, that, and that means us, could feel his connection even in, as his pastimes are not being manifested. And then we're all the way over to then chapter 16. Then chapter 16 is Maharaj Parikshit receives the age of Kali. Just listen to the translation of text 1 of chapter 16. It's like a cut and paste from the end of chapter 12 to the beginning of chapter 16. O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Parikshit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. So, the Bhagavatam is not chronological. There's reasons why this chapter and that chapter and that chapter are somewhere in between, although he certainly could have placed chapter 16 as chapter 13, because the chronology would have flowed very, very naturally. So I want to make the point here that hearing about these qualities of Maharaj Parikshit and Maharaj Yudhisthira from Prabhupada's perspective, it's minimally it's these two things. Krishna should be pleased by our every action, and by living on that basis, then peace and prosperity will come into the world. So now, the next section is discussion in chapter 16 is also for, it's in the same exact language Prabhupada is speaking of the peace and prosperity in this world. Starting with text 17, we're going to read 17 and 18 from chapter 16. Now you may hear from me what happened while Maharaj Parikshit was passing his days, hearing of the good occupations of his forefathers and being absorbed in thought of them. The personality of religious principles, Dharma, was wandering about in the form of a bull, and he met the personality of earth in the form of a cow, who appeared to grieve like a mother who had lost her child. She had tears in her eyes, and the beauty of her body was lost. Thus, Dharma questioned the earth as follows. So he, Prabhupada explains in the purport, bull and cow, the bull being the emblem of moral principle, the cow representative of the earth. When these two, cow and bull, are in joyful mood, morality and the earth, or earth personified, when they're in a joyful state, it is understood that the people of the world are also in a joyful mood. What's the reason? Practically speaking, the cow produces grains and the earth supplies all necessities, so people can be prosperous. And he explains, unfortunately, in our modern context, people are eating the cow and the bull, because they don't have any understanding of Vedic culture. Or it specifically says they don't have understanding of rabbinical culture. The bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading of rabbinical culture as the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs. I'm going to spend some time on this statement because It's one of the theme statements of this first canto. When modern governments have a Department of Cultural Affairs, they're not thinking of cow protection or grammatical culture. They're thinking of, you know, song and dance and merrymaking in very ancient and traditional ways, and that's cultural affairs. Maybe something also with architecture. You know, the arts, performing arts. Largely cultural affairs department. Those, as far as Vedic culture is concerned, those are activities of Shudras, the performing arts. They're necessary in society. It's not a demeaning statement. It's just a statement of what that role is. And it's very much valued in a elevated society, even in a mundane sense, you know, non-spiritual, non-religious even. There's strength in those performing arts expressions. There's in Vedic culture as well, and there's not Vedic culture. There's some power or strength in performing arts. But those performing arts in Vedic culture all had a message. They're all utilized for one on the same message as was presented before, that satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada, now I'm going to go back to chapter 12 and Prabhupada writes, let any man in any place or community in any caste or creed be engaged in all sorts of occupational duty. But he must agree to perform sacrifices as it is recommended in the scriptures for the particular place, time, and person. So the performing arts in Vedic culture were often accompanying some kind of festival or sacrifice or some religious function. In fact, functions were nothing other than religious functions, and the performing artists were very complementary to the create the mood and the message. But what Prabhupada is saying here is the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs is Brahminical culture. That is to say, the most important part of the body is the head. When you lose the head, you can't function. It's death. So, as far as the tree of Vedic wisdom having to do with material and spiritual matters, we discussed this previously. The performing arts connect with the spiritual purpose under the guidance of the brahmanas. And when there's the absence of the brahmanas, you have people with these propensities not directed towards the spiritual objective, then it becomes something else. There's abundant something else's. Artists that, you know, modern art, Museum of Modern Art, they have a whole museum of, and Prabhupada's expression is, this is simply a display of their distorted minds. We were walking in Central Park on the east side, around, I forget what it's called, there's a lake for children, and there's storyteller persons, and you know, the idea is they take school groups and they sit by so-and-so's statue and they tell a story that so-and-so wrote, and the children are very happy, and there's ducks out in the pond, and you know, boats. You know, it's just like peaceful, even though you're in hellish New York City. So, if you were circumambulating around that pond, and then out of curiosity, Prabhupada started walking off the path and heading in a northerly direction along the side of the park, and when we went some distance, all of a sudden we were at the Museum of Modern Art. And before we got there, there was this big sculpture, and the sculpture was just metal twisted in different misshapen configurations. And Prabhupada stopped and went up and examined the thing. And with his cane, he pointed and said, "This is the mind of modern man, expressed, and then they call it art. This distorted, disturbed configurations of mind. For want of rabbinical culture, the performing arts come out like that. And other, you know, various forms." So the well-being of this material side of man's necessities is to be directed by brahminical culture. And so his point here is, when brahminical culture is in place, what will naturally follow is the sense of protection of the cow and the bull. So it's in the literal sense, and it's also in the figurative sense. Morality, the emblem of ethics and morality, will be protected by brahminical culture. Protection of the earth will... So when there are, you know, save the earth, or, you know, protect the whales or something. Just before coming here in Tennessee, there was a CD on, you know, from the Natural Wildlife Society, and they're interested in protecting this species and that species, and they have a whole promotional thing. So that's nice, but our problem is, minus brahminical culture, where does it go? It doesn't lead to the peace and prosperity. It doesn't lead to the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, because an act minus the understanding of the purpose behind it, even a Vedic act, it doesn't bring the result intended. That's something that Krishna said to Nanda Maharaj about the Indra Yajna. He questioned him, what's the purpose? Because without knowing the purpose behind a Vedic act, the intended purpose is not achieved. So how is one going to know purpose without rabbinical culture? So it's needed. So therefore Prabhupada wanted rabbinical culture. He wanted, and there's the absence of it, and so he had to create out of chaos, he had to create rabbinical culture. And that's a challenge. But that was the mission. Then he writes, the morale of society, by advancement of such culture, political culture, the morale of society is properly maintained. And so, peace and prosperity are also attained. There it is again, peace and prosperity. From the first publication of this work, that was an aim. Naturally, a saintly person wants to see peace in society. And it's not prosperity, not in the economic development sense of prosperity, but in the piety sense of prosperity. Because when there's piety, people will be prosperous. And the material well-being is incidental. Like, taken in its ultimate in Vaikuntha. Where is their opulence to be found? Prabhupada would describe that the opulence of the heavenly planets is thousands of times more. The beauty, if someone's attracted by beauty of some beautiful male or female, thousands of times more beautiful are the denizens of the heavenly planets. And the denizens of the heavenly planets, when Kandarpa came to disturb, sent by Indra to agitate the mind of Naranarayan Rishi, he pulled his bow and Naranarayan Rishi manifested thousands of goddesses of fortune that were the beauty of them was thousands of times greater than the beauty of the denizens of the heavenly planets. Kandarpa dropped his bow. Defeated by Madan Mohan, just by his smile and his beauty and his... So the opulence of Vaikuntha is inconceivable with the residents of Vaikuntha. There is no consideration of, oh, now we can really enjoy. It's not just an upgrade, it's like, it's the best. No sense of that. And that's the opulence of the Supreme Lord. And directly, not just vibhutis, but the opulence, direct opulence of the Supreme Lord. That's prosperity. To be in harmony with the Supreme Lord. That kind of prosperity, peace and that kind of prosperity. And when there's that kind of prosperity, the maximum kinds of worldly well-being is there. Or whatever anybody requires. Yoga Kshema Vahamyam. Krishna sees that people have what they need. And so persons aren't feeling want and insufficiency. That's a condition of mind, not a condition of fact. Brahminical culture. And how to make Brahminical culture out of chaos. When Prabhupada wrote in his arrival prayer in Boston of the challenge that he felt, how am I going to be successful in this mission? You sent me here. But look at this. Ignorance and passion only. How are they going to understand pure goodness? So then he refers to the verses of the second chapter of this wonderful first canto where Tado rajas tamo bhava kama lobha dayasti cheta etairana vitam stitvam sattve prasidati. By the process of hearing and chanting, which is the Bhagavad Marg, hearing and chanting with great attention. You know, just like here we are early in the morning and you could be doing, you could be sleeping. Or, you know, some other kind of nice enjoyable activity. But by this Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantak Stolyabad Brahmi Vidhanoti Saritsatam, that the heart is becoming cleansed and the influence of ignorance and passion is diminished and a Vaishnava emerges from that chaos. The soul that's attracted to Krishna. And by that emergence of dormant Krishna consciousness, then the qualities of goodness become automatically manifest in that person. Brahminical culture. Da 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 da. Appears. That's the Bhagavad method. And And two other points. Prabhupada says over and over again, so I'll follow him and say it again. The success of such process is fully dependent upon the qualification of the speaker and the audience. This qualification is, and no result will come from an unqualified speaker and or an unqualified audience. So the imitation of the genuine thing doesn't produce the genuine result. But when the genuine thing is there, genuine result is there. So we want the genuine thing. Must find a qualified speaker and must become ourselves qualified listeners. The second point just went away. Yeah, the second point is that coming attractions. What's coming up is this dialogue between Dharma and Mother Earth, exploring the downside, what happens when Brahminical culture isn't there. So that when we can see all these things are going on, we can connect it to why these bad things are going on. From the perspective of Dharma, it's And as well the purport is the absence of Brahminical culture. When the head of society is lost, it's a misdirected society. It's very elementary, you know, math, 1 + 1 = 2. The head is missing and society is there equals misdirected society. So put the head back on the body and then they have the society, you have properly directed society. So it's the systematic education and training of the ways of Bhagavat Marg are very, very, very important. And we should be a little fussy about that path should be properly performed, not sloppily performed or imitation performed or quarter performed or half performed, but properly performed. Because we want peace and prosperity, we want well-being of the society. We want that Hari should be pleased. We want genuine Vaishnavas exhibiting Brahminical quality. We want that as it is natural, and for the satisfaction of our spiritual masters, previous acharyas and Krishna. It's a very powerful medicine. Bhavo saraj shrotra manoviramat. It's the medicine that cures this disease of Kali. The potency is there in that medicine. So it's to be systematically taken up. It's very effective. Okay. Any discussion?
You were speaking like success of the process is dependent on quality of speaker and audience. Recently I was just thinking like about my hearing process and I feel like lack of humility is, you know, stopping from receiving the things properly. But at the same time I see like if I try to cultivate humility, it seems that I go into the zone where I feel I might get exploited. So how do I understand that I'm taking proper, things according to my capacity and not trying to jump on higher levels unless I'm really there.
The same, well, you just took kind of like a 90 degree turn. The real humility must be, is on a spiritual platform. And before we attain the spiritual platform, we may try to be humble. But that trying to be humble that's not on a spiritual platform is not going to be humble. It's going to be always calculating. Gain and loss, profit and loss. And on the spiritual platform, there's no profit and loss. It's all for Krishna, and Krishna's protection is there. And so the preface was, I feel hesitant because I feel like I may be exploited. But there's, when you're protected by Krishna, what's the exploitation? Look at Prahlad Maharaj, for example. Or anyone, any humility, any exhibition of humility. Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami. And so where there's humility, there are worldly people who may think like, oh, here's an opportunity to exploit somebody. But the devotee, we're not instructed to be naive, but we're instructed to feel that Krishna will give us protection. That's what's one of the items of surrender, one of the principal limbs of surrender, is to feel Krishna is my protector. So Krishna's my protector, and here's this exploiter over there. Who's going to win? And it may look like, oh, look at even the Pandavas, so much difficulty. Because that those exploiters, they were really vicious. Attempted murder multiple ways. So many, tricks. So Pandavas were being exploited, one might look at it, and they were being protected. Their relationship with Krishna was being more intimately secured. So, hardship. But they didn't look at it as hardship. They looked at it as an opportunity of making their relationship with Krishna stronger and depending upon him. And it was wonderful. It was fine. So, I'm speaking now about how the mind may look at something as exploitation. Because I went and tried to be humble, so somebody exploited me. If we're in this profit loss or calculation mode, we're going to take the wrong reading on things. Not a spiritual reading. And from the heart, is that humility what real humility is. So what to do? Because we've got this material contamination that looks at everything through a material lens. Try to hear properly, and hear properly can take us to that place where it's humility on a spiritual platform. At least cultivate on the strength of proper hearing. And then just keep taking little steps. The second part of your question is, taking on more than what you can maintain and more than what is real. So don't do that. Take steps that are doable steps. What's a measure of humility on a spiritual platform? You can start with second chapter Bhagavad Gita by tolerating things. Start with tolerating the mind. Rather, tolerating other people, tolerating your mind. Just don't follow the dictates of the mind. Ignore or tolerate, at least, if not ignore, the dictates of the mind, this material calculation business. Mm. And then invest your consciousness in sat instead. Anything else?
One question is from yesterday, so I'm wondering.
Okay.
Like yesterday you were saying that when Arjun had doubt, he asked questions to Krishna, putting his doubt forward. And previously we also heard that having implicit faith in Guru. So is it based, so it somehow looks contradictory.
What's that? It's that the question of Arjuna wasn't, Krishna, are you qualified? The question of Arjuna was, I haven't somehow understood. Because on the other side of my filters, it sounds like a contradiction, but I'm not questioning your qualification, Arjuna. I'm questioning, seems I misunderstood because it looks like contradictory. Can you help me? Can you clarify? And he did. As I was describing that point yesterday, I was thinking of this discussion we had about Ramachandra Kaviraj and how when he saw the straw, but his spiritual master said, there's a snake. He accepted. And then he examined. He wasn't examining. I think my Guru Maharaj is wrong. He was examining with faith, and as he explored, at least, you know, as far as my senses go, there's not a snake here. And so then he brought his Guru Maharaj and there's no snakes. Okay, now there's no. So faith followed. But there's not question about the person. I need clarity in the instruction of what I'm to do. And I have full faith in by so doing, I'll get to Krishna. So I want clarity about the instruction. That's effective as long as there's full faith. Otherwise, it's another endless program. Because one's mind is convoluted, you know, and anything turns into like 20 things, and how do I sort out these 20 things? It's effective when there's faith.
Yes, Maharaj, you were describing about the beauty, the relative beauty of this world, the heavenly realm, and the Vaikuntha realm. So while it must be a fact that the beauty is, the bodily beauty is features are talked about, but should we understand that as the devotees of the Vaikuntha realm, they are intense, I mean they are associating with Krishna in pure devotional service. So the beauty that they have is not just skin deep, but it's just Vaishnava qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Prabhupada would talk about his devotees like bright dresses.
Sure. Sure. In the description of the kingdom of God, there's this depiction of vimanas, and in the vimanas there's men and women of extraordinary beauty, and yet there's no lustiness. Hmm. Well, that's otherworldly, because worldly is lustiness. Lusty, but you know, trying to enjoy objects. So it when the heart has changed, then that is gone. And then objects, the fullness of the beauty of those objects, or you'll say on the soul platform, can come. Yeah. You had a second question, I forgot. What was yesterday? What about today?
It was just about the hearing like you mentioned also the qualification of the listeners, so just wanted to hear a little more about what is...
Well, that's a repeated theme. So you've heard it so many times, right? Am I here again? Principle-wise, the most important thing is submission. Just like 434 Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidhi pranipatena, submission. So, submission is an expression of humility. It's an action springing from both humility on one side and respect towards the other feature. It's not that I become zero, and with that idea of egoless, but that I become free from false ego, something in a very willful manner. There's submission. Like the Sanatana Goswami blank slate, Sanatana Goswami coming before Mahaprabhu, although he was so vastly learned that even previously he had advised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, two things, don't stay here because this Kazi is a vicious man. At any moment he could do anything. No opposing shot. He could do anything. So it's not a good idea that you stay here because he's peaceful today and tomorrow he could be a monster. And the other was he gave him advice, don't go to Vrindavan with such a large number. So the next day, Mahaprabhu thanked him for that advice and said, who can offer advice like this but you? You're such a qualified person. So although he was such a qualified person, he came before Mahaprabhu like a blank slate. In that sense, submission. Out of humility. And then he was ready to, submission, not mindless, but eager to hear. So the receptive mode. That's in one word is submission. Then a willingness to carry out what is heard. And the third is an inquisitive spirit. I want to know. Often when that, not always, but often when that inquisitive spirit is active, then there are questions that arise. The questions don't mean, I doubt the speaker. The questions means, a further exploring of things. As Maharaj Pariksit did with Shukadeva Goswami, as the sages headed by Shaunaka did in relation to Sutta and so on. Jikyasa, inquisitive spirit. Those are three components so important for proper hearing, becoming a qualified hearer. Anything else? Yes?
You talked about Narayan Maharaj and Rishi. Can you tell something about him? I don't find a lot of information about Narayan Maharaj and Rishi. What is the purpose of his incarnating as Narayan Rishi? Like, for example, Narasimha Avatar, he came just to you know, protect Raghav Maharaj. Is there any reason why Naranarayan Rishi was there? And why that incarnation?
It's not a Leela avatar.
Naranarayan Rishi. It's one of the manifestations of the Lord in which Nara, as Arjuna, the constant associate of Krishna, manifests along with Narayan. So they're enjoying. That's one of the purposes, enjoy together. And they're manifesting a very, both knowledge and austerity. And they're giving shelter to Pritranaya Sadhana, they're giving shelter to the devotees. Krishna advised Uddhava to take shelter of Naranarayan Rishi and their devotees for protection. To manifest transcendental knowledge and sense control by their example in this world. Compassion. That's another form of protection by bringing spiritual value into the world. Yes.
Surely just touched it before, but could you please elaborate more on the point that you made? You should be fussy that the path is properly performed. Can you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, there are we'll say positive and negative. The positive is when we receive some indication of the process, we should be good servants. We should be very conscientious to hear and apply the process so that the example demonstrated represents the real thing. Just like you are dependent upon both the pure teachings of the Bhagavatam, but also those who are representatives of those teachings to understand this is how I should model my life. And similarly, you in turn, as you grow and mature in Krishna consciousness, are going to be that model for others to understand how to apply the process of devotional service in their life. And the closer you get it, the better role model will be for others. And so it's a when you receive something, it's you have the responsibility to use it properly. You follow?
I missed the part about the correlation between when you connect it, depending on the persons that basically on the teachings of the Bhagavatam.
You're reading the Bhagavatam, and so. And you're going along and it speaks about an ideal king. I've never seen an ideal king. What's that? And you read about how a grahastha should perform their life. Well, that looks interesting on a page, but what about real life today? So if you have an example of somebody in real life today that's living what the Bhagavatam says, oh, that's what it is. And then, so that's you. Even if you see something that's not, then you compute similarly. That's what it isn't. Mm-hmm. That's a very flawed, even misleading, replication of what the Bhagavatam says. And so my message is be the former, not the latter. And follow the former, not the latter.
Okay.
then there's the, you know, just take the broader brush stroke and say, you know, society. How to bring peace and prosperity into the world. what's required, well, I put it as a question, to do that, will it be more effective to have really quality people, however many it may be, real quality people, or will it be more effective just to have a lot of people, regardless of quality, doing something? So, now back to the, you know, the question you raised. Our responsibility is to represent the real thing, to follow the real, you know, manifest in our lives the real thing. Receive the real thing, manifest the real thing. It's for our own purification and for the service that we can render to others. So that we make emphasis upon real standards of purity, not just something, you know, do a lot of something, or take a bunch of somethings and do a little bit of a lot of somethings. That's not going to be so effective. In Kali Yuga, that's our tendency. You know, people pick up on something and they get into something. They don't understand how that something connects with, because there isn't proper political culture, how that something connects with. So, you know, you know what I mean? Somebody learns to play sitar, and somebody, you know, they do this, they have it on Venice Beach, healthy. They have no idea what it has to do with anything to make a deeper impression of the religious purpose. It's just, you know, commercialized. Or astrology, or Ayurveda. Everything goes down the tubes. Yoga, kirtan, you know, everything just gets commercialized, put in the blender. It makes some money out of it. Because, you know, the brahminical principle is missing. To reach purity is missing. And people feel good about taking a little of this and a little of that. It's just homogenized, no culture. And so the real culture is brahminical culture. And the pinnacle of brahminical culture is Vaishnavism. Prabhupada just was discussing this. And the pinnacle of Vaishnava culture is Shuddha Bhakti. So people don't want that. I mean, largely. They want a little of this, a little of that, a little of that, feel good about themselves. So that's that tendency and complacency and lack of standard is something that we should be, you know, not fall prey to. However limited we are, know what the goal is and in good association move towards that goal. Step by step by step, gradually, keeping the goal in mind or in front of us.
Just a follow-up on this question. I like the way you answered. So the question. The way I understood your question answer was: so we first be fussy with ourselves in how we apply in our own life instead of policing the rest of the world.
Well, even aside from the rest of the world, just as we're applying, just before you speak about the rest, think about the rest of it. Just what's my responsibility? I received something. What's my responsibility? I should receive it fully. Doctor gives you some medicine. What's the purpose of the medicine? One sense is just so I feel better, so I can get back to business as usual. That's, you know, the purpose of the medicine is not just that. I was with Ritepaji Maharaj. And he's had very terrible health. So he's at a position where he looks much better. He is much better. He said, now is the real test. Because the tendency is, now I can start doing things. But if I just, like, get right into the mode and start doing things, I'll immediately have a relapse. So the idea is, medicine is to get fully strong. So, to receive that which is given to us, just for ourselves, aside from how we impact on the world. Take the real thing. Be the real thing. That's, it may look like selfishness, it's not. It's gratitude from the giver to you. And then there's the social obligation, or the interpersonal obligation unto others. That second one follows the first one. Okay, thank you very much.
We don't need to go to the room for some of the night.